on the cloud. Yeah, man, this thing's cool, man. You just press record, it goes to the cloud, and
Oh, I see the recording thing
there
on
you
the.
go, man. Yeah,
Oh, that's
man. So I
cool.
get all this stuff. So no worries, man. We'll make some mistakes, and I do all the time. But yeah, hey guys, this is Ronnie Fernandez, LCSW, licensed clinical therapist, and welcome to the podcast, Mindset the Guy podcast. And today I have Edgar Hernandez. Edgar, we actually, me and Edgar go way back. We actually went to high school together, and I was on his podcast a couple of weeks ago, which had a great time, and it just kind of poured my whole life story out.
That
So,
was awesome.
yeah. So I'm gonna post that up as well, and it was just, I'm hoping you have like 2 hours of free time, but it was awesome being on the show. And so I was like, man, I need to have you on my show and talk about some of the challenges that you've overcome, So first, let me go. Just go ahead and introduce yourself real quick, and then talk about your podcast, the name, because I cannot pronounce it. So you
It's
make you
kind of a
go
tongue twister.
there.
But my name's Edgar. Everyone calls me Ed now because I'm older.
That's
So
right. We're mature.
last name's Fernandez. Born and raised in LA, in East LA. The name of the podcast is Ed Namrock Podcast. Okay, so it's Ed for short for Edgar. Namrock is an old nickname from an old song that I wrote with a band back in 2002.
Wow.
Yeah, so that it was the name of the song, and it was my favorite song to rehearse, annoyingly so. So that name kind of stuck. Like, all right, Namrock, let's play it again. All right, Namrock, let's play it again. So I'm
I
like,
can see how
oh, okay.
that happens.
So with being in music and stuff like that, people come up with aliases. So that kind of stuck there. And so at Namrock Podcast, I had you on it. I've been doing it for about 7 years already. But seriously, just recently for like 2 years probably. And then born and raised in LA. I actually was born at LAUSC Medical Center, General Hospital, the hood hospital. Everyone knows where that is. There's a shiny new building now in front of it, and behind it is like where Edgar was born. And raised in City Terrace up until 1994. And South Central. So I was back and forth because it's just right there. The freeway's right there to take you everywhere. Right there by Cal State LA. And then I discovered the ultimate like Tri-City area I moved to, which is where you and I grew up. Which is East LA, Commerce, Montebello's right up the street on Garfield. And I'm like, what? Where am I? It's like if you cross the street, you're in East LA. You cross the street, you're in Commerce. You cross the street, you're in Montebello. I'm like, well, this is interesting. And then there's Cantwell High School. And I'm like, don't jump the fence because a dog will get you. I was like, oh, what? What the hell? And
it's a
and then
different role, man.
yeah, what was crazy too is the people were different there too. They were more accepting of, I guess, a light-skinned Mexican man.
I mean, you live in that, it's so Mexican there.
I got all shades of. I was like,
All
whoa,
shades,
yeah. And
super
some
light.
speak
You have beautiful,
Spanish, some
yeah, some tell.
don't.
Yeah,
Some
like I
speak
don't speak
four
Spanish, man.
languages. I'm like, oh, cool. I'm like, this is crazy mixed nuts. I love it. It was like so much variety. And I went to Eastmont Intermediate for my 8th grade year. Coming from El Sereno Junior High, because El Sereno Junior High was a hellhole, man. It was the worst experience of my adolescent life, man. And then 8th grade was like a new resurgence for me.
Decisions.
I started playing flag football for Coach Jordan, who's Joey Jordan, the athletic director now of Belgrains High School, who won the first CIF championship for Sure High School in 1980.
We heard a lot about
Yeah, and
that.
fast forward, I graduated from there, 9th grade, Sure High School. I meet the sophomores from the JV team, and there was Chris Alvarez, there was Ronnie Fernandez, there was his twin brother Bobby Fernandez, there was Eddie Sandoval. I'm like, these guys are scary. What are they gonna do to us?
Were too scary, man. We caused too much trouble.
But no, it was great because I'm like, I was an only child, man, till I was 19. And I'm like, okay, I get these are my brothers now for till
they
graduate. And you're like, well, we're going to graduate before you, so enjoy us for the next 3 years. And I'm like, oh, okay, whatever.
How was that? Well, maybe let's start at the beginning, because I think that's kind of how we started this kind of conversation, and how like being part of a team is kind of like a family, and how you get that role model and stuff. So let's kind of start at the beginning, because I think we can come back to there, because that's definitely part of your story of like growing up. I mean, how was it growing up without a father, man?
It was, oh, man. Okay, I'll tell you the biggest recollection I have of that, and it's as early as probably this might sound freakish, but I remember at three years old. It was 1984. I clearly remember I went to the movies with my mom and her boyfriend to go watch Return of the Jedi.
Oh, wow.
And me, like, you know, an energetic little boy, would run up and down the aisles of the movie theater and being chased out by the ushers, like, hey, get out, you gotta get out, go back in your seat. And then I remember turning back, and I went like this to the kid that was working there, and all I saw was a big Ewok face on the screen. And my mom's boyfriend at the time got mad for me doing that. And the first thing I told him was, you can't tell me shit because you're not my dad. I remember telling him that. So that was the beginning, I remember. Yeah. But technically, my earliest father figure was my godfather in Boyle Heights, because I traveled. I was like a gypsy, man, seriously. So he was my godfather. He wasn't my father, but he did everything he could. Gave me money when I needed it, bought me my toys, bought me food, took me to go feed roosters and chickens in his backyard, took me to some illegal rooster fights.
Wow.
Yeah. Took me to his friend's house where they were like breeding hen and roosters. And I'm just like, okay. So I was kind of growing up a little bit country in a Mexican sense.
Yeah.
Then they send me to Mexico. To go experience that, do the whole Catholic thing with the confirmation, because there's no age limit over there. And I went with him and my godmother. Totally okay with my mom. My mom was, 18, 19. She was working, you know, wherever she could work, because she was here illegally for a while. And I come back with, you know, I was treated for head lice. It was horrible, man. And then I go back. I remember I didn't see them for like a year or two years, because my mom met this new guy who I started calling, you know, dad.
And, how old were you at this point?
When I was, I want to say I was 7.
Wow.
Yeah, 1988. I remember because he had took me to that game 3 at Dodger Stadium with the Gibson home run.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was there for that one on the opposite end. And I remember because he was yelling. And as a kid, I could not fathom that roar of a crowd. It was so traumatizing to me, but it felt good.
Yeah.
I was like, what? I've never felt that.
You were the game one?
It was game one. When Dennis Eckersley pitched against Gibson, was it one or three?
That was game one, bro.
Okay, game one at Dodger Stadium. I thought it was game three. I could be confused, but.
Nope, it's game one.
It was game one, yeah. Because they won it in 7, right?
Or no, they won it in 5, man.
5, I remember.
They won it in 5. It was incredible.
So I remember the Dodger dogs back then. He would bring it to them. They were actual Dodger dogs. They're huge.
Yeah.
Grills, but his name was Jose. And now he is, I don't know if he's co-owner or general manager of Cielito Lindo at Olvera Street, the little taquito place.
Oh, yeah.
They've come out on Vice TV. They're renowned globally. They're right across the street from Union Station. Last time I ran into him, I was working at Radio Shack. I was already an adult. He didn't recognize me. So I don't have a dad. I'm calling this guy dad. I guess he's trying to win over me. you know, because I'm an only child, and you know, he's going out with my mom, whatever. But unfortunately, this is the story I like to share with people, is that since the age of, I guess, eight and a half, nine, right after the World Series ended, I got introduced to what is now known as domestic violence in the house. So this guy, Jose, apparently would run a jealous streak or do whatever. He'd get drunk at the job where he worked there in Olvera, would come back, get all coked out, and just beat my mom in front of me, dude.
Wow.
Yeah, it was tough to watch, man. At one point, I mean, I thought he was really attacking her, which he was. But in my own little, like, 8-9-year-old mind, I'm like, I was trying to grab him and do, you know, do something. But I just remember just got slapped in the face and I knocked over, and I didn't know what to think of it. I thought it was normal, dude, to be honest with you, early. But then it happened again. And this time I'm like, no, this isn't normal. I can't be doing this shit. And this time what had happened, he took me to another Dodger game, like in 89, around there. And he kept buying me stuff, which was a little suspect. Like, what do you want? You want some money? You want a Dodger dog? You want to go to bed? So what was your mom and who was she with? And blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, oh, and me, like a dumb little boy, was giving away my mom, basically cheating on him. And I remember we went back to the apartment in City Terrace, and this guy that I'm supposed to be calling my dad is, I'm like, fuck, something's going to happen. I'm just sitting there like, my mom's just burning a hole with her eye at me. And I'm just like, I'm sorry. Like, he was buying me stuff when I fucking said it.
Yeah, you're 9 at the time?
Yeah, dude. Yeah, 9. And then fast forward, you know, this is stuff that I've talked about before, but not like to a professional like you. But and then it happened. He, same thing, gets drunk, gets coked out, comes back. But this time he really beats the shit out of her, man. And I step in. He gives me a good one in the forehead right here. And I remember my mom's goddaughter and, you know, the people, her compadres, as she would call, they bursted through the door and basically had to hold them down. And I've never, like, felt, like, trembly before. The only other time was the 87 Whittier Narrows quake.
Yeah.
That kind of, like, I shot adrenaline through my, you know, six-year-old body. But I felt the same sensation, and they had to give me salt water to calm my nerves, something like that. Cops came, they found him with a gram of coke in his wallet, and he was like double the alcohol limit, so they took him in. That was it. And yeah, your daddy's gone. And I'm like, it was never my fucking dad, what the fuck. Like,
yeah.
So now I'm roaming around City Terrace, you know, doing I was basically a gypsy. That's what I was, just looking to see where I would fit in. And then fast forward, I remember one time, this is, I hate doing this to my mom for being a little curious boy. I met someone directly across the street, a friend. And I didn't tell my mom where I was. I was literally like 100 feet away, and she thought I went missing.
Wow.
Yeah. And normally Jose would help her, like, find me.
Yeah,
he wasn't around anymore, so she panicked, man. So she got the whole neighborhood to search trash cans, the McDonald's off the 10 freeway right there.
Wow, right there, yeah.
They call before they were already on the phone with the sheriff's department up the hill on Eastern to file a missing child report. And when I just, hey, mom, what's going on? And she's like, I saw my mom turn white, and I'm like, and she grabbed, she just grabbed and held me. She's like, oh my God, where were you? I'm like, I met my friend Jose across the street that way. And she didn't know who the fuck they were. And I'm like, guilt, man.
Yeah.
And I felt bad. Like, now I felt like I have more of a liability to keep my mom happy for what I did wrong.
Yeah.
And I was doing good, man. I was doing real good with her. She was working. I obviously knew. I'm like, shoot, it's just my mom now. It's just me and her. I still have my godfather. So we went and revisited, you know, them. And I was going over periodically and stuff like that. And then I clearly remember, I think it was December 1990. It's funny because I'm cursed with dates, man. I can remember everything. She's like, I met this guy at work and blah, blah, blah. And he's really tall and really handsome. I'm like, okay, so when are you bringing this guy home? What the hell? And that fast forward, that's my kid brother now, my current kid brother, that's his dad. Yeah. And this guy kind of tried to muscle his way into the relationship to become the father figure with me. But knowing the stuff that I've already been through.
Yeah.
I kind of saw through him, and he didn't like that I read through him at such a young age, because he's like, you're a stupid little boy, what do you know? And I remember telling him in Spanish, I go, the fact that you called me a stupid little boy means that you're scared. And he looked at me with a face of disgust. So that sucked. And I'm like, okay. And my mom's in love with him, obviously. Oh, I mean, yeah. And I'm rowing around at this point. Now I'm angry.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I don't answer to nobody. Growing up without a dad, you're like, no one tells you what to do. Not even your own mom.
Yeah.
But in my own head, I'm like, you know, I still have a conscience. I'm like, you know, I still know when I do things wrong. But then things started spiraling out of control, where then I come home, my mom is arguing with them, and I didn't think anything of it, because, you know, I'm like, okay, those days are done. And all I hear is like a really hard, like, I don't even know how to describe it.
And yeah.
Immediately my first muscle memory reaction was like, fuck, what the hell, what's going on? So I go over to the door and the door is jammed. I'm like, hey, what the hell? So I get like a little butter knife and open it. And my mom, he's over her like this, like a gorilla, like with, you know, their fucking children. Staring at me, and my mom has a napkin over her mouth like that, just full of blood. And I'm like, what the hell's going on? She goes, just go over there. It's nothing. I just fell. And I'm like, and he's burning a hole in with his eyes to me. And I'm just like, oh God, dude, not again.
Yeah.
And then I heard something fall, and I just left the house, whatever. Only to come back, he's still at the house, and he has to like take her stuff, like her breakfast, her milk. She can't walk. He kicked her in the hip so hard that she couldn't move. Yeah. And I'm sitting there going, like, okay, I'm starting to tremble again. I'm going, what the hell's going on, dude? Like, this can't be normal. And everyone's coming to visit her, and everyone knows that he hit her. But they're playing it off as if it was an accident, because they were just being rough with each other. But I was the one saying, no, I heard it. I heard a slap, and I heard it. And then they were both shutting me up. And I looked at them, and I'm like, you're supposed to be my dad, but you're doing this shit? I'm like, I knew there was something suspect about you since the get-go.
Yeah.
And he tried to shower me with, like, whatever presents for Christmas and my birthday. I remember, I don't know, I think he got me something like that wasn't even my age or something like that. And I'm like, oh, thanks. And I just threw it, and he did not like that I did that. So and then I would say around like 92 93, all that stuff was back and forth, man. It was so bad. It was like black eyes, me running from the house, running away from the house, man, like just jamming. That's when I met my now brothers that are not even blood, that I've known since 1991. I still talk to this day. They lived right across the street, like up the hill. And whenever I don't know what it was. They knew. I told them, I was open about it. They're like, well, if it's okay, if you can spend the night here, eat here. We're not going to say no. We know what you're going through.
Yeah.
And Ronnie, I kid you not, man, I stood there for almost a week.
Wow.
7 days. My mom, didn't even bother to check on me. She didn't look for me. I was the one, I'm like, maybe she's worried. So I went back only to open the door. And this guy standing in my kitchen, just like, you know, carefully reading whatever he was reading, didn't even acknowledge me. I go by and I'm like, that's weird, man. And I go to my mom. My mom's like, oh, hi. How are you? How, where you been? Are you okay? And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, weren't you looking for me? Or she's like, no, I knew you'd come back because he said you'd come back. And I'm like, who said I would come back? And it was him. And I'm like, yeah. So now he's brainwashing her. Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
So, again, back and forth. Then I start junior high, and this is where it gets really bad, man. It gets really bad, and it was El Sereno Junior High. At this point, like, now, okay, some of the stuff that you go with a dad that teaches you, like, hey, this is how you introduce yourself to a girl and blah blah blah. I did not know what to do. Had a lot of, like, you know, kissing chances with girls at fifth and sixth grade, but I didn't know what to do. I didn't even know how to, like, I knew nothing about being a gentleman. To this day, I'm still learning. And it's like, even like romanticism, it's like kind of alien to me, dude. Sixth grade. Yeah. I remember I was kind of coming to like an adolescent stage where like all my other friends were already kind of having girlfriends, and I was kind of like, kind of tanging along, not even knowing what the hell's going on. And I just had the audacity to ask this man about women, and he looks at me, he said, what are you asking me about it for? And I'm like, because you're obviously a man. She goes, but didn't you tell me I'm not your father? I'm like, yeah, you're not my father, but you're a man. She goes, well, I'm not your dad, so I'm not going to tell you what to do. And I'm like, all right, I see how it is. All right, cool. So I left the house, and the womanly advice that I would get, the fatherly advice that I would get about women were from all the gangbangers around the area.
Yeah.
So I was already hanging out with them.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, okay, I'm obviously significant at the house. I'm just going to go ahead and see where this goes. So I was kind of rolling with the punches. And they treated me like family. They're like, dude, you're always welcome to come over. You know how they are, man. Whenever, you know, I'm like, all right, cool. Like, I was falling for it. And then the bullying started, like, really bad. It was one kid. I already been in a couple fights here and there, but I've never been bullied. Like, that was different. Like, when you engage with someone, like, hey, you know, whatever, you become friends, call it a day. But being bullied was different. It was different for me because I'm like, okay, he's picking on me, but I don't want to fight back. Like, yeah. I don't want to do it, have nothing to do with it. And I would even tell my friends, like, they're like, oh, you always fight anyway, just fight him. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm not going to fight him, dude. Like, no, he wants something from me and I don't want to give it to him. That was my mentality. And I remember telling my mom that when I got home. And she's like, well, if you get into a fight, then I'm going to, you know, you're going to get in trouble. And, you know, they'll be held to pay here. I'm going to go send you to look for your dad. So you go live with him. And I looked at her, I'm like, well, who's my dad? If you can find him, you obviously know who it is, but you haven't even fucking told me. Wow. Like, well, you've been holding out this whole time. And, this idiot makes a comment in the background. He goes, maybe this is why he doesn't want you around. Maybe this is why he didn't want you in the first place. And I remember my mom made this comment to me. She goes, yeah, I should have aborted you. I remember she never forgot that, man.
Wow.
She told that to me more than once, man. That's something that even like to my worst enemy, I will not tell to, man.
Wow.
It's at first when you're a kid, Ronnie, like, it doesn't, you don't know how that translates.
Yeah.
Obviously you can't, there's no way to respond. And yeah, dude. And then I'm just like, okay, what I turned into that was anger.
Yeah, that's usually what guys do. Yeah.
And I was damn good at it, man. Like, yeah. I think to this day, because I started so early with it, I got really good at it.
Yeah.
And the kid picked on me at school. And I didn't even play fair. I should have, because this is what got me in trouble, almost expelled from school. I was already watching pro wrestling for a long time, whatever. And he starts picking on me and I see a steel chair. So I already knew how to hold it and everything. I just whacked him on the head. Boom. Like that. And I thought, like, oh, he's going to get up and try to whatever, because that's what wrestling does. That's in my head thinking.
Yeah.
No, he wasn't getting up, dude. And I'm like, and everyone that was looking to see a fight was like, holy shit, Edgar just killed somebody. And again, that fear.
Yeah.
That same fear I can feel. It just came back. I'm like trembling, holding the chair going, this is not good, man. And here comes the principals and the campus security officers. I'm like, I'm holding the chair and the guy's on the floor.
Oh, man. Wow.
Just like, they're like, what did you do? And I'm like, I hit him in the head with a chair because he was picking on me. And they're like, no, 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 get in the office. So I was public enemy number one, not him, because I never said anything.
Yeah.
And he played the victim card as soon as we went into the office. And my mom got wind of it and she came down and she didn't make things any better. And it was an interesting dynamic. I wound up getting suspended, but not expelled. But I got suspended on a Thursday. I was not to be back at school until Monday. So I had Friday, Saturday, Sunday to, you know, take the time off. But that's when, like, I'm like, I do not want to be home.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, you can't go anywhere. I'm like, you can't make me go anywhere. I'm going to leave anyway. I go, if that guy's in my house, I'm not going to be here.
Yeah.
And so I leave, go hang out with, you know, my brothers from another. And then I would sneak over, hang out with the gangbangers here and there. And then I started writing on walls, man. I started tagging. Just because it became an artistic obsession at first, but I met one of the most profound graffiti artists in our area, and his name is Snooze. And he's the one that kind of taught us how to do it. And he invited us over his house in the El Sereno Hills to, they'll have a mirror. You can, you know, test it out with these, they're called striders. They'll paint markers, you know, if it sucks, then I'm going to cross it out and put my name over it. And it was intimidating for me. I'm like, again, I'm feeling redemption and significance, because I'm like, okay, well, I'm a part of something. Cause I, you know, obviously I'm insignificant at the house. And then I got caught. And luckily the authorities weren't called, but it was this one older white dude. He had a Confederate flag on his in his lawn.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was in Norwalk too.
Really? Yeah,
weird, right?
Mm-hmm.
And catches me, tells my godparents, like, hey, you wrote on my wall. You can, you know, send me the I can order to get it sandblasted. I'll send you the bill. They said it's fine, whatever. But then he looks at me. He's like, come here. Come into my garage. We're shooting pool. Like, I want to talk to you real quick. And I'm just like, why? And he starts asking me, like, where are you from? Where's your dad? You know, I'm like, well, what dad? Like, I don't know. I go, this is where I'm from. Those are my godparents, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he's nodding his head going, man, like, I never forgot his words. He said, stay in school. He's like, play a sport, choose one. And then stick with it. And I'm just like, play a sport? I'm like, well, which one? And I never forgot this, man. He had a bunch of San Francisco 49er memorabilia in the back.
Yeah.
And then he had a picture of Brett Favre at the bottom being drafted by the Atlanta Falcons. He's like, I never forgot. He's like, yeah, Joe Montana's great, but you want to throw football like that guy? And I'm like, who? I'm like, Brett Favre? Brett Favre? And yeah, fast forward, right? Then I start playing sports.
Yeah.
And, I'm obviously filling in whatever. My mom to this day, man, not even at Truro High School, she never went to a game.
Really?
Yeah. And the last game that she went to, the only game that she went to was, you're going to laugh at this. It was my senior year and our first round of the playoffs against Pioneer. And I didn't even start because my buddy Peter Mora started over me my senior year. And I played one down on defense.
Wow.
And she was there with that idiot at the time. And this is 98.
Wow.
Yeah. And backtracking, like it was all me. I would walk to the park for practice. Everyone would make fun of me how I threw a football because I didn't have a strong arm. I didn't, I threw one good pass and like, all right, you're the starter next week. I'm like, the what? So I had no one to like, hey, so what do I do? Like, how do I prepare for this? For the longest time, I would just set up different stuff like to like hit, man, just drop back, hit. I had no one to practice with.
How did you start off in football? Like who, was it in high school or did you play?
No, it was, in seventh grade.
It was in seventh grade, like to play football team?
Yeah. Like I made the choice to join because I saw a flyer at City Terrace Park. And my friends are already egging me on like, hey, you want to play? I mean, you could play with the big boys, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, I guess I'll play. I'm like, I knew the game. I was a fan of it, but I never played it.
Yeah.
And then when I played it, I'm like, oh man, like I really like this. Like, how can I get better at it? And I remember that's the first time I got hit during a block. Someone just cheap shotted me on flag football. I got cheap shotted and I got up and I'm just like, oh dude, like this hurts. And I had coaches were like, just this nature of the game, you just get up and just keep going. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Whatever. So, but with time, just repetition, I'm like, okay, so obviously if you're faster, and throw the ball harder, you can win. I'm like, okay. I go back home, shit still, whenever, now I found an outlet.
Yeah.
And now I'm seeking mentors and father figures that know about the game.
Yeah.
And that can teach me. And I'm like, okay, well, anyone in the area that I can walk to, I found nobody, man. Found nobody. That was so weird. At seventh grade was such a lonely year. And then they threw me in the pub doing the Lions Den as a starter, and we didn't win a game, man. Didn't win a fucking game. So, and then I would come home tired as hell. I would shower and not really talk about my day, man. I didn't.
Yeah.
And it sucked. I'm like, I had to talk to my friends about it. My gangbanger friends are like, hey, that's cool enough, but when are you going to get into the neighborhood? When are you going to get into the neighborhood? When are you going to get, that's all I kept hearing. I'm just like, I really like this football thing, man. He's like, yeah, but you can still bang in the neighborhood and be play football. And I'm like, I'm not going to have time for gangbanging, man. I'm going to be busy playing football.
Yeah.
And this is already when East LA Bobcats was coming over to recruit.
Yeah.
And then it happened. So I remember, I think it was the end of 93. And I was already telling my godparents about what was going on at home. So I was staying with my godfather and my godmother. And I remember my mom wanting to pick me up in the middle of the night and they wouldn't let her. So now it's like, wait a minute, you're not letting me pick up my own son to take him home. They're like, no, you know why? You know why? And that's all I remember as a kid. Now I'm thinking, holy shit, like my godparents don't want me to grow up with my mom. And the one time that kept happening repeatedly. And then finally I did go home one time. I slipped through the cracks because I'm like, I want to go home, dude. Like, what the hell? And I remember the landline kept blowing up. And I don't know what happened. We came home, everything seemed normal. And before we knew it, they were in the room. I never slept on a bed at all. I was on couches like half my life. Mm-hmm. I don't know what happened. it sounded like a full on brawl in my mom's room. And I'm like, good night again, man. So I get up and the door is locked and I finally jam it open and then someone just pushes it. And then the door hits me in the face. I'm like, what the fuck, dude? Like, what's going on? So I keep banging on the door. I'm like, hey, leave my mom alone. And I'm stomping on the floor to alert the neighbors. Like, hey, if you hear this shit again, call the cops. Because my mom was not calling the cops, man. Was not. And I that's the impression I got. I'm like, you guys just going to let them beat the shit out of you and the cops are not going to come. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to be around for that. And finally, I get the door open, man. And I, to this day, I mean, I even tell my wife, like, sometimes I wake up in, you know, night sweats because I still remember this vividly. Yeah. I see my mom tied to the four posts of the bed, like a fucking sacrifice, man, like that. And he's on top of her and he gets up. He's like, it tells me in Spanish, I told you to fucking close the door, you piece of shit. And he just decks me right here. Boom.
Oh, wow.
I never felt my neck crank like that. And that, I don't know. Now that I know the art of a concussion and a knockout, I'm pretty sure I was wobbly because my legs gave out.
Yeah.
And I just got up slowly and walked over to the couch and I just laid down going, please let this be over. And I was hearing some horrific shit in the background. And he stuffed a handkerchief down my mom's throat so she wouldn't fucking scream when he was just fucking, like, literally, like, now when I see a ground and pound in MMA, that's exactly what he did to her.
Wow.
Yeah, cinched his legs right under her hips, like right below, and then just fucked her up, dude. Then I hear a knock at the door, a hard, authoritative knock at the door with like a flashlight. They're like, sheriff's department. I'm just like, oh, thank God, man. But we used to have a lock that needed a key from the inside and outside to open, and I didn't have it.
Wow.
So I'm like, I didn't know how to explain it because I'm just still coming to it, but for some reason they opened it, man.
Yeah.
And they looked at me and they're like, you okay? And I'm like, yeah, he's in there. And I heard some crazy shit going on in there. They subdued him, whatever. They take him away. And I'm just like, fuck, man. Like, what the fuck just happened? And they take my mom to the hospital. And I'm like, all right, this fucking sucks, man. So I go across the street to my friends and I can't even walk, Ronnie. And I'm like, fuck, what are you doing, man? Like, and I was about to cross the street. I remember pushing the button across the street right there by my old elementary on City Terrace and Eastern. And I'm like, I think I want to go back home. So I just went back home. I didn't even make it up the hill. I fell asleep. My mom hasn't been discharged from the hospital. And I wake up and I see the fucking thing opening, the door opening, and it's him. He just got released.
Whoa.
And I looked at him, he looks at me and he just smiles. And I'm like, what the fuck, man? So immediately I'm like, I went across the street, told my brothers from another, I'm like, hey man, this happened. I wanted to come over last night. How come you didn't call? I'm like, cause he unhooks the phone from the landline, so I can't call nobody. And they're like, no, you're staying here, man. Don't go back. You're not going back. And I'm just like, I guess not, man. I'm not going to go back. And then at this point, my mom was looking for me now. She's like, oh, I'm like, oh, now you want to look for me. What the fuck?
Yeah.
And she's like, look, I have a plan. We need to start fresh. And I'm like, what? She's like, I'm going to move us out. And I'm like, move, what? I'm like, I'm not fucking leaving from here. This is my hometown. I'm like, I'm not leaving from here. He goes, no, he's going to leave to Mexico for a week. This gives us a chance to move the fuck out. He's just going to come home to an empty house. And I'm like, this is bizarre. I'm like, we're going to move out and she's not going to tell him where we're moving. So at this point, I'm thinking we're moving far, man.
And yeah,
I'm telling all my friends that I grew up with, I'm like, man, dude, like, I'm nervous again, that shaky feeling.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, like, where are we going, man? She's not telling me anything. She just wants me to help pack the truck. And And my friends are like, man, this sucks, dude. Are we going to see you again? I'm like, no, fuck that. I'm like, you're going to see me again, man. And I'm thinking we're moving to like, fuck, like high desert, whatever. And no, we moved to Montebello, East LA. Okay. And I'm like, wow, this is quite the upgrade, mom.
Yeah.
I'm like, cool. But so we move in there the summer of 94. And that's where I grew up. And then so the blessing there was that I got to move there. And I still have my godparents to support me the whole way. That was the big blessing. It was like, there was no coping, man. There was no coping. Even I discovered coping in my adult life. I didn't cope all through high school because it got worse, man, when we moved there. Just, I think it didn't get any worse, man.
Yeah.
I just, and I remember talking to you my junior year when it happened, because it was your senior year and it was the weekend of Halloween. I forgot you had dressed up that week too for a pep rally. It's crazy because my mom feels like you're cursed with a good memory because of the trauma you've had. Mm. I'm like, yeah, I think so, because I remember really, really like insignificant details of shit.
Yeah.
From playbooks to I had Miss Belt for third period.
Yeah,
like shit like that. But like there was no coping, dude. Like not even in a good way, or even in like and there was a lot of bad ways, obviously, but there was no coping. Like I didn't know how to cope.
What was it with football? Was that your way of dealing with it? You mean like you just kind of got lost in it?
Now that's where that was the biggest and probably the best blessing that I ever discovered, because the first real father figure I discovered when I went to Shore High School was Coach Pruitt.
Pruitt, yeah.
Coach Ron Pruitt. I'm like, yeah. What is this man?
Yeah. Oh, like, professional football player.
I'm like, I wish I grew up with a dad just like this, man.
Yeah.
And then there was Coach O'Gorman, Coach Casey O'Gorman.
Yeah.
He was a part-time cop, and he was like, yeah, it's, you know, I see crazy shit on duty. I'll show you guys some crime photos later. And I'm like, what? I'm like, that's so cool. I've always wanted a dad that was a cop too. That's awesome. And then I think the biggest, like, but I guess the biggest defining factor of my escape was definitely Coach Cito.
Mm.
Coach Cito was, I'm sure, because you and I both played for him our JV years, and he showed me what it was like to be at least, you know, a good student, not, you know, Albert Einstein or Elon Musk. He's like, just be a good student. And he introduced me to another big influence, which is Coach Bruce Vlink.
And the track, right?
Yeah. So that was my biggest, like, him and Coach Manuel Quintero, who's still there to this day, who's a head track coach. Those are my biggest father figures, because everyone likes to say, was it Coach Mike Mayrall? No, because to be honest, Coach Mike Mayrall reminded me so much of my mom.
Hmm.
And that's why I was so defiant with them. I was kind of mouthy with them, kind of sneered at him, didn't believe anything he's saying. I'm like, oh, you're full of shit.
Yeah.
Like he didn't like that I was very mouthy. And I'm sure that I did that to myself. And, you know, I didn't, you know, my edge rank with him was not as good as it other athletes, but I couldn't help but to be honest with them. And fast forward, like, then I met other people like Coach Victor Salazar. I met Coach Danny Vargas. I met what was that coach that looked like Joe Montana? Who's the tennis coach?
Oh,
it's our defensive coordinator.
Oh gosh, yeah, he was good.
He was amazing.
Yeah, he was great. Gosh, Bobby would know him.
Yeah,
King,
Coach King. Yes,
gosh,
he was amazing.
Yeah.
And he was a big influence too. And then ultimately, like, Once the way I got lost, not just in football and track, was them at telling me, demanding that, oh, it's not me you're trying to please. The only one that was that was Mike Mayrall. Mike Mayrall was like that with me.
Yeah.
Don't try to please me. He's like, you are your own competition. They gave me that Michael Jordan mentality early.
Yeah.
Like, you're the one to beat. You're your own competition. And I didn't get that at first. I'm like, that's new. Like, no one's ever taught me that before.
Yeah.
And then Manuel Quintero was like, oh, help me change the spare tire. And I'm like, change the spare tire? Like, on what? He's like, on my car. Come over here. I'll show you how to jack it. And I'm like, how to – all this stuff. I'm like, what do you – a jacket? Like a jacket? Like, yeah. It's hot. What?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, man. And I never forgot this. He goes, didn't your dad teach you shit, man? And I'm like – I go, oh, that sucks, coach. I go, come on, man. And he's like, what? He's like, you didn't learn anything from your dad? And I'm like, are you really asking me that, man?
Yeah.
And he looked at me with a confused face like, oh – like he got it. He's like, I'm like, yeah. I go, you can show me. And he's like, oh shit. Like his eyes just peeled. Like, oh
yeah.
Like he just had immediately the responsibility turned to him, like to show me something I've never learned.
Yeah.
And yeah. I remember like, you know, holding the jack wrong and not knowing how to twist it the right way. And my hands are dirty, and I'm like, fuck, is your hand supposed to be this dirty when you do this? He goes, yeah. He says, just got to wash them afterwards. I'm like, well, what? The water's not coming out. He goes, no, there's this thing called orange. I'm like, orange? I'm like, what is it? So he puts it on my hand, and I'm like, oh, it feels nasty. It's like rocks.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, it's pumice. I'm like, pumice? Like, he's just throwing stuff. I'm like, oh, man. Like, I even told him, I'm like, man, if you could just be my big brother, I would love it.
Yeah. But
at this point, he was nodding his head. He's like, well, it might be just more than that.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. I'm almost positive because of the treatment and all the fighting within coaches that took place with me over me. He spread the word like, hey, man, this guy's a gem. You can mold him.
Yeah.
And all the coaches just went, what? Like, ooh, like,
yeah,
this is a bastard basically. That's going to be mine.
Yeah.
And,
now
you know, the push and pull that was going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's what it was, man, because I was so transparent with them, letting them know like, hey man, like I don't live a good life at home. This is my home now.
Yeah. I had no idea, man. Like no idea, and you don't pick that as a kid. You don't pick it up, you know. And I've always been pretty observant, and I never like had an idea.
Well, I trained myself early, Ronnie, to hide it, because I had to. I had to hide it because I wanted no one to help me. I wanted no one to get bothered by my whatever. It wasn't until probably, I think it was, to be honest with you, man, it was that incident in 1997 that was the breaking point. It was tough, man.
Like, yeah.
It was, I remember talking to you that week. I forgot what I talked to you about. And you told me, you called me by my nickname, Bledsoe. He's like, hey, Bledsoe, he's like, how many sacks are you going to get this week? And I'm like, I'm going to try to get at least four, man. He's like, yeah, because San Gabriel sucks. And I'm like, okay, cool. And I'm like, should I line up on the strong end or the weak end? He's like, just look for the guy that backpedals the most when they come off the ball. And I'm like, how do you know this shit? I think that's what I was talking to you about, because I was already on a roll with, because I was playing on Thursdays and Fridays.
Yeah,
for 3 years straight, dude. I mean, I was like, shit. So I remember talking to you about that, and then the day before the game, Ronnie, I'm getting my rest, whatever. My mom wakes me up at 3 a.m, man, drunk as white girl spring break in April, man. And she's mad. She's big. Man. Mad, and she's like, get your ass up, we're getting in the car. I'm like, where are you taking me? Like, you obviously are not. She's stumbling, she can't even open the door. And I'm like, I am not getting in the car with this woman. She grabs a bat and threatens to hit me with it if I don't get in the car. And I'm like, what did I just do? Don't hit me. I have a game in the morning. I said all this shit, right? To have her. She caught this idiot cheating red-handed. She called, I guess, a phone number that he found in his wallet, and she kept it. He had no idea. So we drove from right there in the neighborhood all the way to El Monte to catch him, basically pull up in front of us. Didn't even see us. He pulled up in front of us, and it was clearly his car because flamboyant Mexicans like to put like Zacatecas in the back of their window or whatever. And he was one of those people. Yeah. And I'm thinking, okay, my mom's going to follow him, Ronnie. And this is where, again, that drilling and shake came in. My mom hits the gas, dude, and basically goes, tries to run him off the road, but hits him head on like that. I don't have my seatbelt on. So I flew into the windshield and hit my head. But I'm so used to all the impacts that we've had that it was like nothing. But I'm pretty sure I was concussed because I could taste like copper in my mouth.
Oh, yeah.
And he pulls out to the side. My mom, he follows him. She gets the bat. And I'm already bigger and stronger at this point. And he's only fucking with her when I'm not at home. He's doing it behind my back. And he's about to punch her, and I'm like, hey, hold on. I went like that. And he's like, oh, he kind of backed down, and you just see the bat just land on his neck. Boom, right here, like full force. Like not even like a check swing, dude. Like it was a Louisville Slugger that I had. And she's beating the crap out of him on the sidewalk. He's just taking it. And I'm like, mom, let's get the hell out of the car. I see lights, man. I'm like, this is not going to end well. We get in the car, we go back, and she's crying. And I'm looking at her like, you dumb. And I'm like, we're going to get pulled over. My mom's going to crash. I'm putting my seatbelt on a little too late for that. And I'm just sitting there, and I'm like, let's see what happens right now. So we get home safely. But she's like, at this point, it's 6:30. And I'm like, mom, I have to get to class. Like I have a big game today. It was our homecoming week, man.
Yeah.
It was big week. And then I'm like, oh, I'll take you right now. I'm like, are you sure you're going to take me? Like that was scary. Just coming back. She goes, no, I'll take you. And then we get out and I could see his car parked around the corner. He's not in it. And my mom's yelling at her top of her lungs. I know you're fucking in there. I'm just like, oh no, man. Like I'm thinking, I'm like, should I just stay? And my mom's like, no. I'm not going to, you've had perfect attendance for blah, blah, blah. And I'm not going to let this ruin it for you. And I'm like, I just had an eerie feeling. I just had a feeling, but the day went by. It was just kind of like, it was like a Wonder Years moment the entire day from first period to the pep rally.
Yeah.
It was one of those. And then that's when I saw you and I talked to you about that. And man, I had the best game of my life, man. I had 9 sacks. No, 8.5. And then one of them was notorious. I just went past the blindside tackle, and I sacked the guy from behind. I kind of whiplashed him a little bit, and I got up and I did the right.
Yeah.
And everyone, I was the film. It was film of the week, right?
Yeah.
So everything was cool, man. I'm like, fuck, this is amazing. Like it was, you're on a high. All right. Yeah. Okay, cool. I'm like, now I got to go home. So I go home, and downstairs we had a neighbor. Her name was Alicia, and she had, you know, she recovered, her leg recovered from polio. So she walked with a limp. Mm-hmm. She's like, Edgar, come here. And I'm like, oh, what's up? What's going on? She goes, come here. Your mom's downstairs. And I'm like, downstairs. And then from the corner of my eye, there's a stop sign right there on Olympic and Hanover. Mm-hmm. And it's just dripping with blood, dude. And I'm like, why is my mom in your house? She goes, oh, I have her on the bed. I'm like, why do you have never mind. She's, I'm like, I push her out of the way. She goes, wait. Let's see if she's away. I'm like, no. I opened Ronnie. Another horrific image in my head. I opened the door. My mom slit from here all the way here. So her head's shaved. She's got staples all in her skull like that.
Wow.
She's sedated, man. But she can see, she's like, hi, Mijo, how are you? And I'm just like, I didn't know what to say. I was speechless. She told me what happened. I didn't have no reply. The anger switch went like that, dude. And now I felt the shakes were gone. They were gone, man. Now I see how people turn into murderers, man.
Yeah.
Like, it was, now I'm like, she told me what happened when she got back after she dropped me off for first period. He was hiding behind my mom's apartment door. She had a bat on her just in case he just snuck up on her, but he did sneak up on her. Dragged her by the hair, like, down the stairs from the second floor. Literally lifted her up from the floor and slammed her skull, dude, on... You know, the stop signs are jagged.
Yeah.
Boom. That was it. Fled the scene. My mom was, like, bleeding out right there, like, convulsing, apparently. 911 gets called. She, poor Alicia, she's, you know, she has polio legs. She's handicapped. She can't help her. So everyone was trying to stop the bleeding. ER came, they rushed her to the hospital, and she was discharged the same day because she told them, I need to get discharged because I need to go pick up my son from school. And they're like, no, you're not going anywhere. And I don't know what happened, but I guess you can just get released on your own waiver or whatever. She came home, and I made a phone call, man, right before that's Friday game. Our team, our old teammate, he's passed away now, God rest his soul. But I told him, I'm like, hey, man, like, I know where this guy works. I need a weapon, man, like now. He's like, all right, cool. What time you want me to meet? And he meets me. He's like, yeah, make sure, you know, the magazine's loaded, you know, with handkerchiefs so you don't have fingerprints. He was guiding me through the whole legal process.
Wow.
And I was nervous, man. I wasn't like the shakes, but I was nervous. I'm like, fuck, I'm actually going to get to kill someone that I've been wanting to kill for a long time, because I'm right outside the parking lot where he works. And he's like, how do you want to do? You want to wait till he gets back in his car? I'm like, I'm just going to walk in and just end it, man. I don't care what happens at this point. He's like, are you sure you want to do that? Because I'm going to flee the scene. Like, I don't know you. And I'm like, I don't care. And I go, I want him to see me. And I kid you not, Ronnie, right? I mean, I haven't even seen the weapon. I don't even think he brought it, to be honest with you. I think he was just like kind of humoring me. If anything, I was just probably going to, we were just going to beat the shit out of him in the parking lot. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, he's dead now. I can't talk to him about it anymore.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, I never talked to him after that, because as soon as I was about to say, all right, let's rock and roll, a bunch of squad cars surrounded the workplace and got him out.
Wow.
He did that to my mom and had the nerve to still go to work and act like nothing happened. Goes to jail for a year and 3 months. Yeah. He's calling the house, you know, collect calls from prison, whatever. All that stuff. I'm just like, my senior year is awesome right now.
You know,
totally awesome. I was like loving my senior year, man. And until one, I didn't get the starting job. Because that's a whole different issue.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Daddy Mayraw wasn't giving me what I wanted, and I wasn't giving him what he expected.
How could you, man, going through all that stuff? Like, how would you, I mean, I know that now you have a wife and you have kids, like,
yeah.
And you're, you know, you're doing things, you have a podcast, you have a full-time job. A lot of guys that have gone through that,
yeah,
they can't do that.
Man, it was tough.
That might have to be a whole podcast by itself.
Well, the defining factor here was he got out of jail, and I came home after, I think it was Montebello, when we went to triple overtime at Heeman Field, and I had to come in and relieve my buddy Peter Mora, who's a starting quarterback, and I kicked it into gear, and everyone was like, holy crap, he's back, number 12's back, and I was like, I never left. I just didn't get the starting job, you know? And I came home and my mom's like, oh, how'd it go? And I'm like, it was an awesome game, but I know you don't want to hear about it, whatever.
Yeah.
And she's like, I have a surprise for you. And here he comes out. He is skinny. Like he's not nutritionally healthy.
Yeah.
And he's standing in front of me, man. And I'm like, when I wake up, he's not going to be here, right? And she's like, no, he's not. I'm like, okay. So when I woke up, he was still there. And he's about to jump in the shower. And I'm like, you go and wait. I'm going to go take a shower first. I go, if not, do you have a problem with that? And he's like, nope, I have no problem with that. And he sat and waited. And at this point, I think he probably got the shit beat out of him in jail.
Yeah.
So he was a different person. And then, you know, I'm functioning the rest of my senior year. My senior graduation was really awkward because of what happened next. He leaves, he disappears. And I think it was like maybe 2 months before I committed to Whittier College to go play there. She's like, I have another surprise for you. I'm like, what is he going to pop up from now, from the chimney or what? And she goes, no, I'm pregnant. And I'm like, from who? She's like, and I'm like, oh man, really? She goes, yeah. She's like, you're going to have a sibling, you know, a sibling that you always wanted. And I'm like, okay. So graduation was awkward. Prom was really awkward. I just did not treat my mom with the same respect that I did. And then I left for camp to Whittier College. Did not even talk to her like throughout the whole camp. Didn't make no communication with her. I was fully moved into the dorms. And I only came back. When I came back is to get some other stuff to move into my new dorm. And that's just like, how you been? Like she's trying to, I'm like, I'm all right. I'm like, you don't want to ask me how I am? I'm like, you're obviously pregnant. I don't know. So I was being a real jerk to her.
Yeah.
And then go through the process. I mean, I'm thinking, okay, even, you know, D3 schools get scouted too, right? So I'm doing great in camp, man. And then my back starts acting up again. I'm like, fuck, man, this is not what I need right now. So I skipped the weight room, and that kind of set me back because you have to lift weights in college.
Yeah.
And now I had to rely on just my speed and my arm. And when you have a guy that's 6'6", 245 pounds, that's a transfer from the University of Pittsburgh starting, but he's dumb as a bag of rocks, man. I'm like, oh, I think I got to outsmart this guy. So we had our first preseason game against West LA College. And he did horrible. I'm like, how is this guy a transfer from D1? I'm like, check this out. Hold my Gatorade.
Yeah.
So I went in and I was just whipping it, man. Boom. And they're like, whoa, where did this guy come from? They're like, oh, Shure High School's coming in. Shure High School's coming in. And they pulled me out after like maybe like two series because I made like a couple bad reads. And that was it. But I'm like, I'm tired. I'm beat up, man. Like and then I got placed on academic probation because it's hard being an athlete and then doing that. And then I get the dreaded news. Oh, you're $575 short on your tuition. You can't come back till you pay it. And I'm just like, what? Like, what was work study for? And they're like, well, you work and you pay, but sometimes you don't always work. Like sometimes they don't schedule it to work. So that's on you to pay it out of pocket. And I maxed out all my grants, all my loans, everything. So I was just like, oh, man, I just did for the January term that they give you for free.
Yeah.
And I bailed. I'm like,
wow.
Yeah. And then I came home. My mom was already ready to pop, man. And I came home. And I remember the day before my kid brother was born on February 16th in 2000. That's his birthday. He's a millennial. My mom was like, hey, I'm having contractions, heavy ones. If I'm not here in the morning, don't worry. That means I went to the hospital. I'm like, what? I go, I'm going to take you there. I'll drive you there. Don't worry about it. She goes, no, you're going to start your first job. So don't worry about it. I don't want you to lose your first job. So I wake up at 5. I couldn't sleep. I wake up at 5:45 in the morning. My mom's gone. So fast forward, what now the stuff that I'm doing, I saw him. Yeah. As soon as I saw my kid brother, I'm like, oh, man. Like, how can I be mad at this guy? It's not his fault.
Yeah.
And then as he got bigger, I'm just like, oh, man, I really got to step up my game. Like, I didn't know. Now I'm like, I'm feeling the pressure. I'm like, I'm just working, just like you. I was just working and then trying to be a rock star.
Yeah.
Working, trying to be a rock star. Working, trying to be a rock star. I was like, oh, man, like, there's got to be more. So, like, that's why when I think it was when my mom kicked me out of the house, man. Yeah, that I really had to kind of like grow. I mean, that was a growing experience if you want to hear about it, because all the stuff I went through, I grew from it. Being kicked out of the house, I grew from it. It forced me to grow as a person. Like, oh, well, I have somewhere to go, but this is a deal. I have to negotiate my own deal with the person. And it was like, yeah, okay, you're living under my roof. These are my rules. I'm not very strict. This is what you got to do. And these are the people that moved from City Terrace that I grew up with to Pico. And the life lesson that I learned, man, is, don't burn your bridges, man.
it's always about relationships, man.
I can honestly say, as reserved as I was in high school too, I was never a dick to anybody. I still talk to even some people that don't even remember me, man.
Yeah.
They're like, how do I know you? And I'm like, class of 99, man. Sure, high school. He said, no, I was 98. And I'm like, yeah, but I knew you. They're like they're trying desperately to. Yeah. I always insinuate nobody's going to remember me. So I have to elaborate and explain. And then they don't remember me at first. And then later they're like, oh, I remember you now, dude, what's up? And I'm like, yeah, man. He's like, you were always cool, man. Like, how you been? I heard you were in a rock band and blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, it was me. And so that's a big life lesson I learned, man. Just don't burn your bridges. And
yeah, what? So somebody that's going through the same thing that you went through, and having that difficult home.
Yeah.
What would you tell them? Like, what would your bit of advice be?
Well, unfortunately, a family member of mine is going through almost a mirror image of what I went through, only without the domestic violence. Mm. The only thing I can say, and someone that if I'm talking to not just someone that's going through a similar situation as I, but somebody else that can either relate, or me, I'm talking to myself in 1991.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to say something. There's no room for silence. There's not.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to reach out to someone that might just listen to you. Don't assume that no one knows what you're going through. And the one thing for sure I would highly recommend, if someone would go through, is learn how to defend yourself. Definitely learn how to defend yourself.
Yeah.
Because there's things that sometimes words cannot help you with. And that's unfortunate, because then you have to, that's your fight or flight.
Yeah.
You either run away or you stay there and fight and make sure you make it a point like, hey, you're going to have to do something illegally physical to take me down, even at such a young age. It sucks. It really does suck. I'm going to say that it does suck, but hey, look, learning how to defend yourself is not a bad thing. It's not.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
And don't be afraid to call authorities. Don't be afraid to document stuff. Everyone clowns on social media not being the correct outlet for a lot of these things, but quite frankly, you'd be surprised who listens to you when you post stuff about your personal life, like something that's alarming.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised. I've reached out to people like, hey man, what was that all about? Like, you okay? I'm checking in. I'm genuinely concerned for your well-being. Yeah. And if they say, no, it's okay, I was just effing around, whatever. And I'm like, even if you were, it's still alarming to me. I just want to let you know, you can call me. I know you don't like to dial. Or message me.
Yeah.
Let me know if you're doing okay. And I can either try to help you. I mean, if it's out of my jurisdiction, or refer to someone that can. Because it's not worth all that, man. It's not.
Yeah, man. Wow, an incredible story, man. Thank you for sharing, bro. I appreciate it, man.
I have to, man. I have to share. I mean, as selfish as it might sound, talk about myself. I never tell these stories, dude. I started telling these stories more when I got with my current wife now.
Yeah.
And back then it was my girlfriend. I used to tell all these stories, and she was kind of like, "Well, why didn't you just forget about it? You know, live in the now." And I'm like, "It's hard. It's indented. It's
like
a big scar." So,
and that's the big thing, is that you have to talk about it. But then, yeah, like what you just said, like it makes us feel a certain way where we can't, where we're like wasting somebody's time or something. It just, but we don't, you know. And I, this is why I started this, was to give some examples, because we don't, man. Usually we're just told like just to suck it up and just take it, or you know, but being able to talk about it with, especially with another man, dude, just like, damn. And I didn't even say anything, man. I just listened to you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And it comes out, man. If you just ask.
Yeah, it does. I didn't, you know, ask you too many questions. It was just listening. And I think sometimes when guys are in that position where somebody's talking about what happened, well, you don't have to say anything. You just listen, man. So thank you, man, for sharing, man. I appreciate it. Man. And we'll definitely do some more stuff together, and we'll definitely talk about how we're gonna put this out and how you want to do it, but
you can put it raw, man. I mean, it's uncut. I mean, there's a lot of detail in this story and this whole thing that people need to really regard, because I mean, this is as raw and unfabricated that of a story that I can tell. I mean, that's the one that first comes out, like whenever someone tells me like, hey, have you ever, tell me about an obstacle you've overcome, and I'm like, oh, well, it started a long time ago.
It's definitely, it's a powerful story, man. I mean, just, I'll probably edit this out, but it has a lot, like, it reminds me a lot of my dad. Yeah. Hearing my dad with the similar stuff with his stepdad, and it was brutal, man. So he still has those like night terrors and those like, you know, rough time taking showers, doing those type of things, man.
Yeah.
But it's crazy. It just reminded me a lot of my dad. That's why I was listening a lot, man.
Yeah.
So man, I appreciate it, bro. And
of course, man. Of course.
Well, I'll probably put it up in a couple of weeks. I'm trying to do a bunch of them right now, and then I'll let you know. And then I'll give you the file, and then you know, you can do whatever you want with it.
Yeah, of course, man.
You know, if you want to share with, you know, with your wife or something like that, it's pretty interesting. So,
of course, bro. Of course, man.
All right, man. We got to meet up soon, man. Let me go ahead and stop recording. Stop. How do I stop?
It should be like a stop button.
It never recorded, actually.